This is a recording.
Yes.
This is an interview with Tanya Hosch as part of the Women's History Project, recorded at the Port Adelaide Football Club in 22nd of March 2018. Thank you. Tanya, would you please provide your name, a brief interview of when and where you were born and grew up?
So I was born in Adelaide, the Queen Victoria Hospital in 1970. I grew up in the suburbs of Gillis Plains, Fairview Park and Clearview.
When did you start working with at the Women's Information Switchboard? Was it Switchboard in your day?
It was Switchboard. Well, what year would it have been? Would have been the early 90s. So I think I was about 22 actually. I think I was 22. So I think it was 1993 I started working there. It might have been a bit longer. Can't quite remember. I'd only ever had administrative roles before that time. I came in originally as a temporary person to be like the Indigenous worker after Joanne Wilmot had left after many years of service at the Switchboard. So I went in temporarily and then ended up applying for the job and winning it.
Excellent. So how long were you there altogether, do you think?
Oh, that's a good question. Not sure. I think I was there for a couple of years, at least 2 years, maybe three. And then one day out of absolute exasperation and frustration, where taking yet another call from a woman who was trying to escape a violent relationship, couldn't understand why there weren't more services available for women in that situation, couldn't understand that there weren't more safe housing options, I was young and I was naive and I was just frustrated. I couldn't understand that I was trying to find somewhere for this woman to go and I couldn't find anywhere that had a vacancy. And I had an opportunity to speak to the Office for Women, or the Status of Women at the time, who I guess in the structure was like our parent company. Sorry. And I said, what are you doing? I don't understand. Why is it so hard? And I don't know what possessed me, but I said, I really think that you should let me come and work up here for a few months and get a sense of what you do, because you're obviously talking to decision makers. Now, when I think back, it was a very brave thing for someone with my lack of experience to do, but I did it. The words came out of my mouth. I didn't give it a lot of thought. Anyway, they said yes. And you know, really, both at the Women's Switchboard but also in the Office for Women, I was surrounded by fantastic women who really supported me and nurtured me and I think believed that I had potential. So it was at the Women's Switchboard that I went to university. Never occurred to me that that was something I could possibly do, but it was the women, you know, volunteers and paid staff who said, you know, you're quite capable, like you should give it a go. So when people talk to me about my career and how I got here, I do think of my time at the Women's Information Switchboard as the turning point for me in terms of actually having genuine support to try and to pursue what I wanted to pursue.
So it encouraged you to follow your dreams?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Or even discover if you had any?
Just, you know, encouraged me to just, you know, take opportunities and to try new things, which, you know, I really didn't expect to have much of a career. I had no career plans that were achievable. The only things that I wanted to do weren't really options for me. So, you know, going to WIS was a real turning point.
That's good. So what did you like about working there, apart from the frustration of dealing with domestic violence, which I share?
Yes.
And
yeah.
Still is not sadly resolved today, although
no.
There are better coordinated services now than they used to be.
Yeah, definitely. Look, I liked helping people. Even now, some of my family members say to me, you know, They think I was my happiest working there. I really enjoyed working with people. I enjoyed helping people, from quite simple things to quite complex things. I really enjoyed the history of the organisation. I loved what it stood for. It's where I discovered feminism and, you know, became a feminist and understood the intersectionality between being a woman and being an Indigenous woman. And it was an important place for me to grow up. And in that, I was surrounded by, you know, staff and volunteers. And, you know, it wasn't always a happy marriage between the staff and the volunteers. And that was challenging, but I learned a lot through that too. And I enjoyed working with the volunteers, enjoyed working with the paid staff. I enjoyed being around women I could learn from. I enjoyed being in an all-female organisation. It's probably the only time I ever have been. I just learnt so much. But it came at a time where, you know, I was still quite young, and so I was a big sponge in any case. But I learned about things that I don't think I would have probably in any other job. Yeah.
Mm. And so what did you go off to study when you...
Bachelor of Social Work.
Part-time?
Yeah, studied part-time, worked full-time. So I started a Bachelor of Social Work. I didn't end up completing that because of the part-time study with full-time work, and my jobs just became increasingly more demanding, and I just couldn't get to lectures, and then I started moving around the country. It just got too hard, unfortunately. But, that was a great degree to do in the context of WIS, and I suppose it was working there that made me realise that's the work I really enjoyed. And, you know, interacting with the women's community health sector and the women's library that Dean used to run, what was it called?
Women's Studies Resource Centre.
You know, the Women's Studies Resource Centre. And all these women's organisations that probably weren't very well supported or funded, but they were such important institutions, and became obvious to me very quickly how important all of that was, and it just helped me to understand the history and the work that had gone into getting these things established, and I had enormous respect for that, and I guess I was lucky to be a recipient of all the good things that came from that work.
And it was a good time when we had all those things.
Yes, it was.
Because women's health has now evaporated.
Yeah.
There's the Women's Studies Resource Centre has disappeared.
Yeah.
We now only have the Working Women's Centre and WIS, really.
And I spent a stint at the Working Women's Centre too. I mean, I'm so grateful for it. Mm. You know, and I talk about that in public quite frequently. When I did the International Women's Day breakfast a couple of weeks ago, I talked about WIS being an important part of my development and my feminist journey. And, you know, it's an important time in my life, absolutely.
Okay, so did you work in the phone room, the shop front?
Phone room, mostly. So, you know, at the time that I was at WIS, we did have walk-ins as well. So sometimes you would be dealing with someone in front of you. But I guess largely you're on the phone, but also, you know, going and speaking to groups. I feel like that was probably the first time I actually had to speak in public, which I was terrified by, and now I find myself doing it on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. So the organisation put me out of my comfort zone, but it did it in a pretty supportive way. And, I enjoyed all of it, really.
Yeah. Have you got any names of people you'd like to mention, of people you've particularly enjoyed working with?
Well, Sarah Marshall, who came in very similar time to me as one of the information officers, and she and I are still very good friends. In fact, I spent last night with her. And we've had our children at the same time. We've both got one daughter, and we had them within weeks of each other, and we live on opposite sides of town, but that's where that friendship developed. It's very important. Obviously, Dean Heyman, you were a great source of support, Liz, from the Legal Services Commission, so you were someone that used to support us a lot, and we used to use your resources a lot.
I used to be the email queen, yes. Sending people emails whether they wanted them or not.
Yeah, well, I don't even think we had email when I was at WIS.
That's maybe true, yeah. Yeah. Might have been later.
We didn't even have the internet.
Because I didn't go to the commission until the 90s.
Yeah.
And we did have computers, but I'm not sure we had emails. I think you might be right.
Yeah. Who else? Vaya Proyos.
She was the coordinator then, Vaya?
Yeah, for a period when I was there, but then she was at the Office for Women when I went up there. Patricia May became a very close personal friend and a great support. Mention also Barbara Kempnich, who was at the Office for Women, who I got to know there.
So who was the director?
Stella Hollander.
I've interviewed Stella.
Stella. Lien Nguyen Navis.
Yep.
She was the Vietnamese worker. There's a great woman who was the Spanish worker, Renee
Wheel.
Yeah, I couldn't remember her last name. So yeah, Jenny Adams started exactly at the same time as I did, and she was great fun and a lot more experienced than I was, but she, you know, really took me under her wing as well. So there's so many great women. There was a volunteer who had a big impact on me. There was a number of those, but Heidi, whose last name I can't remember.
I remember Heidi.
Heidi.
What about the Tuesday group? Were they still going then?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, the Tuesday group. Rita. Heather.
Heather.
Yeah, mm. Yeah. Yep.
Wonderful. Who was the director of the Office for Women?
Carmel O'Loughlin.
That was Carmel O'Loughlin at the time.
Yeah.
Did Switchboard change during the time you were there? Where were you located when you first went? Were you still in Kintore Avenue?
Yeah, Kintore Avenue. Yeah.
And the whole time you were there? Okay,
yeah.
So
yeah.
It moved later?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Do you think there's still a need for an information service for women?
Oh, I couldn't imagine there wouldn't be. I don't know how many women know about it. I don't know how much the service is used these days or anything like that. But, you know, I think there'll always be a need for information. I guess, you know, a lot of us now have smartphones and the internet, and so it's probably a bit easier for people to find information themselves. But you have to know what you're looking for as well. And I think that service of being able to pick up the phone and talk to a person, talk to another woman who will listen to what you're trying to deal with and help you understand what might be available, I just can't imagine that would ever not be an entirely valuable thing to have.
Yeah, the question of options.
Yes.
Giving people options is just always empowering women.
And also just listening.
And listening.
Listening to women,
so
even
important.
They can find the information themselves. Sometimes just having a confidential conversation with someone else who's not judging you and is only interest and only agenda, not trying to sell you anything, just trying to make sure that you're okay.
So what sort of people were using Switchboard at the time you were involved?
Oh, look, I think, you know, certainly there was a lot of domestic violence, family violence related work that came through, quite a lot of sexual assault, which was something that I was really quite passionate about at that time and really concerned, because I was aware just how difficult it would be for a woman to pursue a sexual assault case, and became more aware of that. Certainly, you know, just general women's health issues in the main. I remember one night being on a shift on a Friday night, I think it was, and getting a call, and it was a woman from Kangaroo Island, and I will never forget it because she just said in one breath, "Now, do you know how I can tell if my cow is in calf and where I can buy popping corn in bulk?" I will never forget that call. I was astounded and I thought, that's really interesting. But, I mean, how great that someone could pick up the phone and ask that question.
Yeah.
And then I remember there was a regular caller who'd ring up several times a day to ask what time it was, because clearly she was lonely and didn't get to talk to many people. And, I just think the fact that we were able to be there for everybody was very special.
Yeah, and I think it still is. Mm. What about working with people like the Renes and the Lins and the Stellas? What did you find that useful, working with women from all different backgrounds? Because for me, having come from a sheltered background, that was really, really important to me.
Yeah, look, it was. It was very enriching, I suppose, because I sort of had a lot of diversity in my general life, I suppose. But, I mean, there were also communities I had no insight into, and, you know, that mix of women definitely were very important. I suppose one thing, though, on reflection, there were different times where the services were being reviewed, and there did tend to be this sort of competitive thing about, you know, well, why does the Indigenous work get this when they're not doing a radio program in language? And there were some unhelpful conversations, I think, and ways of dealing with that. So I think while the organisation really genuinely strived to be a service that could service all women, and I think it should have done that too, I don't think we always had our house in order in terms of how we internally dealt with some of the conflicts that would, you know, be, it would come up, you know, just because of the reduction in resources and what that meant. And I feel like that was probably quite a difficult part of that, but, you know, I don't think that was one individual's fault. I thought we're just under pressure in a system that didn't always value the work we did.
And a lot of passionate women.
Yes, absolutely.
Trying to do the best for their particular group.
Yeah, absolutely.
When you were there, were there lots of contact with Aboriginal women?
Look, not really. I think when Joanne Wilmot was there, she'd been in the role for a long time. She's well known in the Aboriginal community. You know, she'd obviously done a great deal of work in a lot of places, and so she had a much bigger network, whereas I was still finding my place in the Indigenous community in South Australia, so I didn't get a lot of support from Indigenous women. I did sometimes, but not always, and it was one of the things that I felt inadequate about while I was there. I mean, there were trips that I was able to be involved with to sort of go out and talk to Aboriginal communities, and they were great, but to be honest, I was too inexperienced to know how to fix that. But I did do a portion of sort of community consultation in partnership with the Indigenous worker at the Working Women's Centre for a while, and that allowed us to sort of travel around South Australia and go to different communities and talk about what we did.
That would have been wonderful. So who was that?
Oh, her name was Ella. I can't remember her last name.
I remember,
yeah. It was good. And I think...
And to get to those communities is a real privilege, isn't
it?
It
is, yeah. But the other thing I did as I sort of started to learn what I really enjoyed about the work and what I was interested in, I remember going and seeing Vicky Tuvey, who was running Adelaide Women's Community Health Centre at the time, and told her what my interest was. And she offered me an opportunity to sit on their board of management, which was the sort of first committee I'd ever joined. And again, you know, sitting under the tutelage of these really experienced, passionate women, that was really where my world opened up as well, because I realised that there were lots of ways that I could make a contribution, and I was just hungry to learn and be effective. So the engagement I had through the women's service there was also good in terms of helping me really get to know what some of the specific issues for Indigenous women were.
That would have been wonderful. So, the internet.
Yes.
The internet was still fairly infant.
Oh, it wasn't. We didn't have it. We didn't have it when I was there.
No internet at all? Did have computers,
We did have computers with that information system. We did, the community information system, yep. That was the only computer that we really had, yeah. Yeah. In my time, yeah.
Yeah, so there was a little network of computers that where you could access.
Yeah.
But it was pretty simple.
Yes, it was.
Stuff, wasn't
yeah, it?
It
was. Yeah, compared to now, definitely.
And people really, some of them really clung to the old yellow book.
Yes, they did. That's true. Yeah, they didn't like to use a computer. And then I remember when we had the first TTY set up.
Oh, yes.
So that we could communicate with people who couldn't hear. And, you know, learning how to use that, and, you know, that was pretty exciting because that would seem like amazing technology at the time.
And it hasn't changed that much, the TTY.
Yeah, is that right?
I guess it probably
doesn't need to.
Yeah, it was really effective then, and it still is.
Yeah.
Okay, what about outreach services? Did you go to field days and...
Yep.
You said you went out and gave talks things. Can you remember any particular examples of places you went to?
No, not really. Nothing specific.
Nothing stands out?
No, not really.
What about the support group? Was that still active in your time?
The support group,
the umbrella organisation that sits around Switchboard of all the different women's organisations, and they used to meet once every 2 months or something and get a report on WISP. Was that really operational then?
I don't remember, Liz. That does ring a bell, but I don't know that... I don't really recall it.
Because one of the other people I've interviewed said at a time of threat,
yeah,
someone alerted the support group,
yes,
to the fact that... the state government were thinking of cutting the switchboard. And all of a sudden these women's organisations got around and started ringing up the minister and
I do recall something like that happening.
So you think something like that happened in your time?
Yeah, I do. I think switchboards survived a number of threats.
Yeah. When you were talking about Joe and your role, in my observation of when I was there, we always seem to have a lot more Aboriginal women coming to the organisation or ringing the organisation when there was an Aboriginal worker.
Yeah.
Do you think that would still be true today, or do you think...
Yeah, it would be, yeah. You know, so long as that person was able to promote the fact that they were there and people knew that they were there. I mean, I enjoyed that I was able to work with women of all backgrounds, but I think, you know, I did feel like it was my responsibility to be there. I know that when I left... and I wasn't replaced as an Indigenous worker. There were a few Aboriginal women who made a point of going in and asking to speak to an Indigenous worker so they could be officially told there wasn't one. And I remember, I think I might have even threatened, because I was so outraged they didn't replace me, that I think I might have threatened that I'd get some women to make a fuss. And I never actually did that, but it happened all of its own accord. Now, probably because I, you know, very stupidly, you know, said that I might make that happen, no one was ever going to believe it. It wasn't, I wasn't behind it, but I know that I wasn't. And, you know, that was good that women would actually went in and, you know, made a big statement in the building.
Excellent.
Yeah, yeah. So that was good. And I think it does show that people might not always need something themselves, but they know that their community needs it and they want to make sure that it's there.
Yes, because I've been raising it of late.
Yes.
Because apparently there are some Aboriginal women in the Office for Women.
Right.
But no one,
in
no
the...
volunteers or staff in the actual switchboard itself. So I've been asking questions.
Oh, well, perhaps I could go back and volunteer in all my free time.
Well, you've got so much free time, haven't you?
Mm.
What are there any phone-ins or things happened while you were there? Because phone-ins were a big deal when I was there. We had phone-ins on domestic violence and family law and goodness knows what.
Yeah, well, when I was there, I think Friday night fortnightly, there was a thing called Lesbian Line.
Oh, yes.
So lesbian women who predominantly seemed to come out of community health and women's health would volunteer, I think, from 7 till 9 p.m. every other Friday night to take calls from lesbian women. And if you worked on shift for the non-lesbian line calls, because in the evenings you'd be there on your own, these women, I learnt a lot from them, that they educated me a lot about issues for lesbian women. Mm. So I'm still very grateful for that grounding, because it came from a very informed place, and so really great expertise that was being shared through the service. And then a couple of Mother's Days I was rostered on, and there was always a call in line for relinquishing mothers.
Oh, yes.
On Mother's,
that's yes. That's right. Yes,
yeah.
I remember them.
Yeah.
Australian relinquishing mothers.
Yes, and as someone who was adopted, I had my own perception on the other side of that. And so that was great for me too, to listen to these women. And I think it helped me resolve a lot of my own grief about being adopted and understanding the perspective of women who had felt like they had to give their child up.
And the pressure they were offered under.
Yeah, yeah. And so to be someone who was listening to those calls was very, a huge privilege, really. And I always thought it was ironic that I'd end up getting rostered on that day every year.
It is funny, isn't it?
Mm.
So, other things about Switchboard in general, are there other comments you want to make about things you talked about or things you learnt or the kind of training you had?
Yeah, well, we did have regular training where, you know, people with particular expertise would come in and, you know, talk us through what services they were offering. And, you know, I remember STARS was a big one that was quite new at the time. Mm. So learning about them, I always was very impressed with Yarrow Place and what they did, and also what's it called, the abortion clinic.
I can't think of their name either. Yeah, whatever.
And
the name
going
is.
And having a tour to see how that worked, because you were referring women to those clinics, and to go to the places that you were referring women to was very, very helpful, because you got a bit of a sense of what they were going to be experiencing when they arrived, and you could comfort people by having said, well, I've been there and I've, you know.
You could prepare them.
Yeah, a little bit better. And you had a greater sense of confidence about where you were sending women to. Mm. I used to hate it when someone would be looking for a counselling service and you know that there'd be a long waiting list to get an appointment. And, you know, often you were kind of referring in the dark a bit, because you'd had to just give the broadest brush approach because you knew that there were long waiting lists, and people usually at that point are pretty, it's a sense of urgency by the time they pick up the phone often. Mm-hmm. And then to have to say, well, I can make a referral, it's going to take 6 to 8 weeks minimum, and to not know what the quality of the service might be depending on where you sent them, and you know, you hear rumours about different experiences and things like that. I had some scary experiences too, you know, where especially on a Friday night you'd be there on your own working, and you know, some bloke would ring up and, you know, threaten and give abuse because you were working in a women's service. And, you know, I remember one night actually being really fearful about leaving the building because I wondered if he was going to be outside. So there were definitely some of those sorts of horrible things that happened. But overall, I suppose, you know, that strong network of incredibly dedicated volunteers who turned up every week, sometimes twice a week or even more, just so dedicated to the place, and that I think instilled in me a real sense of responsibility to do the best I could for the time I was there.
Mm. Yes, occupational health and safety was in its infancy.
It was
in those days, because I remember being at real risk when I was there one weekend on my own.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
a violent man came in saying, where's my wife? And I had to persuade him to leave somehow.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was the only one there. So I know exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
We hadn't sort of, those aspects had not really been thought through.
No,
they?
Probably not. No.
Yes. No. And we were lucky that nothing serious happened.
Probably, yeah.
People managed
the
circumstances.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
So what hours was which switch was still working? Was it still
9 till 9?
Still 9 to 9,
seven days
a week.
Yeah, when
now,
I was there.
Of course, it's 9 to 5, 5 days a week.
Yeah.
It's a bit different the way it operates now.
Yeah. And I always used to think that the most interesting calls came in at night and on the weekends.
Oh, well, you're on your own too.
Yeah,
and they were the most challenging, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah.
What about things like the women's legal service? Were they still doing that on a Saturday afternoon when you were there?
Oh, yeah, they were. Yeah, actually,
I've
forgotten about that.
In?
Yes, absolutely. There was the women's legal service coming in and being able to offer that advice from that network of volunteers who were lawyers, because the women's legal service didn't exist at that time.
No, I think it started about 95, 96, is my recollection.
Yeah, yeah.
They were the precursor, really, weren't they?
Yeah. So I remember the manual with all the lawyers, the female lawyers in the folder.
That's right. And all those women's services, like the women mechanics and the women plumbers and the women carpenters and all these things. I wonder if they could ask those questions anymore.
Oh, yeah, I'd be fascinated.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to
We'd have
ask,
to go and do a shift, Liz.
Yeah,
see,
well, we
see
may,
what we get.
Maybe we'll get invited to the celebration and we can ask all our questions.
Yes,
then.
When is that?
It'll be sometime in June, I think, June or July, because that's my recollection of when it started, because the original staff were employed on a Red Scheme unemployment program.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And that was started around June, I think. It would have been the end of June, beginning of July.
Oh, okay.
And that's sort of when it started, as far as I can remember.
Right.
Is there anything else you'd like to make a point of talking about reflecting on your time at Switchboard, anything else you'd like to have on the record?
Oh, look, just emphasise again just how grateful I am for that time and those women.
Thank you, Tanya Hosh, for your time.
You're welcome. Is that it?
Yep.
Wow. Okay, well, we did well.
We did. That was... We...